The Piano Matters is supported by Jacobs Music in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, the area representative of Steinway & Sons for new and previously owned Steinway pianos. More information is available at jacobsmusic.com. Welcome to The Piano Matters. I'm your host, David Dubal, and so pleased to be listening with you. On the next three programs, I will deviate from our usual format, and we shall have programs, three of them, dedicated to the great Glenn Gould. It's the 35th anniversary of his death. Had he lived past 50 only, he would be 85 this month on September 25th. I'm more than pleased to be talking to the pianist, writer, and teacher, Benjamin Laudy, L-A-U-D-E. Ben Laudy has been one of my most valuable colleagues at the Juilliard School, and Ben has had his master's there, his doctorate, and he was a wonderful, wonderful pianist in many of my evening division classes where he played a variety of repertoire, one of his specialties being Beethoven 4th, and we will not be hearing that today. He has been a very, very big part of my musical life. I'm a fan of his piano playing, of which we shall hear some later. Benjamin Laudy is a magnificent proponent of Bach's Goldberg Variations. And on the second program in this series, we will have performances of Gould doing both of his celebrated versions of the Goldberg. Well, Ben, what is it that makes Glenn Gould so special? Indeed, an obsession with the people that love him.
First of all, David, I just want to say thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be on the show. What makes Gould so special? That depends on who you are. For many people, what makes him special is his eccentricities, his warm coats, his love of animals, the singing that he usually practices during his playing. It's all of the external traits that make him such an odd character, which I would never deny. For me, what makes him special is his artistry. It's what he actually puts into his music, and it's the moments when he loses himself, in fact, when he loses that external character, the eccentricities, the marketable Gould, I would call him, and gets inside the music and is able to achieve a state of wonder and what he called ecstasy in his performances. That is what I'm interested in when I listen to Gould.
Yeah, and that is what I think we should all be interested in. The personality and eccentricities have just been overblown by the public, and it's actually, the public does not know the extraordinary amount of repertoire and other aspects, his writings and so forth. We have, Benjamin, so many things to get done, so let's begin very quickly with some music, because there's a lot of segments you've programmed, and thank you for doing that. What about our opening piece, the B-flat major prelude and fugue?
I just think it's vintage Gould. He recorded this in the early 60s when he was working on the well-tempered clavier. It shows the speedy Gould, which many people identify with Gould's playing. But it's not just fast. If you listen to the end of the prelude, which is quite high in velocity, by the end there's such playful recitatives and gestural playing that you lose track of the fact that this music is 200 or 300 years old. It really sounds fresh and original, like it's being played right now for us.
I think that's one of the things he has, don't you?
Yeah, this music is really alive. This is the B-flat major prelude and fugue from book one of his Well-Tempered Clavier.
Thank you. Glenn Gould in the B-flat major Prelude and Fugue, Book 1. Benjamin Laudy is my guest. And my reaction, of course, is, my goodness, there's so much joy in this man. Every bone had ecstasy and blood.
Well, the fugue especially, it's played with such ebullience, such clarity, and such democracy, I would say, between voices. You really get a sense that there's an entire village or even society that's alive and speaking with one another and collaborating with one another. It's truly a spiritual communal playing.
A spiritual communal playing with some of the greatest finger technique of all time, right?
Absolutely.
Benjamin Laudy is my guest on our three programs devoted to Glenn Gould, who would have been 85 years old. The Prelude in C major is probably the most famous piece that he ever wrote. How many thousands of people, even at the beginning of their being a piano pupil, did not try this Prelude in C? Everyone will know it. Talk about this.
Well, as a piano teacher, I can tell you I've taught this piece many times. And the general, typical way of playing it is very legato, often pedaled. And if you're Gounod, you would use it as the basis for an Ave Maria.
Mm-hmm. Which was a very famous piece in the late 19th century.
And it was precisely because of the popularity of this particular work. The fact that it was so amenable to a kind of popular idioms, such as the Ave Maria, that made Gould see it as kind of a Hollywood piece.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He would call this a sort of Hollywood classical piece and put it on the level of Rachmaninoff Prelude even, which means he had to do something different with it.
And does he do anything different? Yes. And let's listen to the great Glenn Gould, National Hero of Canada, play the C major, Book 1, a piece that, soon as I hear it, I know I've never heard it. In that performance, we heard Glenn Gould in the Prelude in C major, one of the most famous pieces in the world, Book 1, Well-Tempered Clavier, and Benjamin Laudy is my guest. And Ben, tell us how you feel about the singing, because I know that you have a little clip of him talking about it himself.
This is one of Gould's famous eccentricities, and I think it's time we settle the score and hear from Gould himself.
I can't do without it. I would if I could. It's a terrible distraction. I don't like it. I would resent any artist whose records I bought indulging himself that way, and I don't see why anyone puts up with it. We do the best we can. We put as many baffles around the piano as we can. I can only say I play very much less well if I don't indulge in a few vocal elaborations.
Well, there's obviously some kind of recreative element or generation going on in there while you play.
I think there's a wishful thinking aspect, too. That is the way I would like my phrases to be made, and I'm never quite able to do that at the keyboard.
Can you tell us, Benjamin, who was the interviewer here?
John McClure.
Yes, he was at Columbia in their great days, and they were really, I think, good pals. We're going to hear another Gould and an incredible performance. It's from the Little Prelude and Fugue in C minor. Tell us what the Little Prelude means.
Well, these are little preludes that are not as well known as his Well-Tempered Clavier. They're often played by students and amateur musicians, but they're absolutely delectable pieces. This C minor prelude in particular is in two voices, played by the two hands, and Gould manages to bring two completely different spirits into the piece. And yet these spirits are acknowledging each other. They're aware of each other. The left hand is legato, the right hand is staccato. And by the end, as easy as one might consider this work to play on the piano, you get the sense in Gould's hands that you've been in the presence of something quite rare indeed.
Well, everything he does is rare indeed. And we're going to hear the prelude, Little C Minor Prelude. Let's hear the piece. Thank you. Glenn Gould in the Little C Minor Prelude. Well, structure is everything to Gould, and we're not going to be talking about his gloves in the summer or his strange habits. We're going to talk about one of the most important things in his mind, and that is the form and the structure of a work.
Yeah, when you think of Bach these days, you might think of harpsichords or period instruments or various historical ways of thinking about the music. Gould actually thought of Bach ahistorically. He thought of Bach's pieces as if they stood outside of time, almost a kind of Platonic conception of the work. Mm-hmm. And he saw them as unities, mm-hmm. meaning there weren't any parts of the pieces that were extraneous or were meant for some kind of show or ceremony. Every element in Bach's works had to relate to some kind of integral whole or idea. And Gould was at pains to get that sense of unity and structure across, not just in Bach, it turns out, but in absolutely everything he played.
Why was it that Bach was his main interest? Was that inevitable?
Gould was first and foremost a pianist, but he saw himself as more than just that. In fact, he associated being a pianist with being a kind of romantic of a kind that he didn't prefer. Instead, what Gould saw in Bach, whether he was playing it on a piano or listening to it, what he was interested in Bach was the counterpoint, the interplay of different voices. And one of his problems with a lot of romantic piano playing and romantic composers is that he felt that they treated the instrument as if it was too homogeneous, as if it was meant for one one kind of affect or mood.
I understand. And of course, the great romantics are not contrapuntists on the level of Bach, that's for sure. I want us to see Bach the Dancer, and we're going to hear that celebrated gavotte from the G major French suite, and we'll have a comparison also. We'll talk about that in a second. Here is Glenn Gould from the Fifth French Suite.
So you mentioned the dance element in Bach, and it's hard to imagine Glenn dancing. And of course, dancing is something extra musical. And as we mentioned, Gould is all about what's internal to the music. Mm-hmm. So you may have noticed that the way he achieved his own dance flavor in this gavotte was with a very precise and strict beat, almost the kind of beat you might hear in an electronic dance hall of some kind of modern day.
Yes.
And in fact, Gould was going for that. He really liked Wendy Carlos's Switched on Bach performances, which were extremely motoric and strict in their pulse. And it's one way to make people dance. It's certainly in fashion nowadays. Perhaps in Louis XIV's court in the late 17th century, there were different ways of dancing that were more flexible, that were more gestural. And it's those types of nuances that you're going to hear in this version of the same gavotte from the same French suite played by Andras Schiff. So you can get a sense of the differences between Gould and one of the other notable performers of Bach of our time. Thank you.
That was András Schiff in the Gavotte in G major, and we heard first Glenn Gould and then Schiff. And what a difference, how interesting. Well, let's move on to the G minor prelude. Talk a little bit about the way Glenn Gould thought of trills, because this is a beautiful example.
Well, Gould had a troubled relationship with trills, because trills, of course, are ornaments, and ornaments are decorations, and decorations are things you put on to objects from the outside. And, of course, one of our themes today is discussing Gould's sense of structure and internal relations in Bach. And so what you'll notice when you listen to Gould is he'll either leave trills out completely, or when he does play a trill, he measures the trill. You actually hear every note as if it could have been written as eighth notes or as triplets or sixteenths. And perhaps the starkest example of this is at the beginning of this G minor prelude. It's supposed to be a free trill in the right hand. Gould actually plays it in a way that it could be measured and notated, and you'll hear it immediately. It's very striking. And
it sure is.
Nobody else does it this way.
Yeah, nobody could. G minor prelude from Book One of The Well-Tempered Clavier, played by, of course, Glenn Gould. My guest is the pianist, born in Texas, I believe. Is that right?
I grew up in Texas, actually born in California.
Well, that's just as good. Benjamin Lodi, and we're colleagues at Juilliard, and I think he's a wonderful scholar of Glenn Gould. And tell me, how did you come to the art of Glenn Gould?
Well, just a quick anecdote. When I was a freshman in high school, I had an English project where we had to read biographies of famous individuals. And I didn't know anything about the world at the time. And I think it was my dad who suggested that I take a look at a biography by a pianist by the name of Glenn Gould, who I had only heard of once before. And that was in the opening pages of my copy of the Bach Inventions, which listed all the different performers' tempos of the Bach Inventions. And I noticed right away, Gould's tempos were always either way faster than everybody else's or much slower. So I'd heard of Gould in that capacity, And then I read an entire biography by Peter Ostwald, and I actually made a video and gave a performance of a G major prelude when I was a freshman in high school, and that was right around the time when I started falling in love with the piano. And so Gould has been with me since the beginning.
So this is a tremendous spiritual force in your life as well as musical.
Yeah, I would say Gould is my spirit animal.
A spirit animal. How wonderful, Benjamin. Ben, we're going to hear the late and the early recording of what he called one of his party pieces, the Italian Concerto.
Yeah, just briefly, you'll notice between the two versions here, not only a difference in tempo, but a difference in clarity and what I would call orchestration. Gould plays the last movement of the Italian Concerto in his 1981 later recording much more as if there's bassoons and violas and trumpets all entering in with the different lines and textures. It's also a little bit slower and much more specific in its sense of pulse. The early recording is, again, classic Gould taking flight, flying his way through the keys. It's much more pianistic, again. So I think what you'll hear is the difference between, on the one hand, our first recording, which is the later Gould, a more orchestral Gould, and the earlier Gould from the 1950s, who's the more pianistic Gould.
Can't wait to hear both of them. We'll hear them together. Thank you. you just heard the early Glenn Gould recording of the Italian Concerto's finale and the later one. Which do you prefer? I like them both, of course. Well, let's move on. This is The Piano Matters. I'm so glad to be with you. And my guest is Benjamin Laudy, American pianist, born in California and lives with us in New York. The Courant from the E minor partita. I adore it. And Gould's performance is wonderful. And now we're going to also have, one after each other, the Courant played first by Gould and then by you.
Yeah, if I could indulge just for a second. I mean, I came all the way here to the studio to record. I might as well bring a copy of my own playing to put side by side with Gould. We'll see who you like more.
Thank you. the Corinthi from the E minor partita, and it was Glenn Gould first and then Ben Lawdy second. And I think that you were wonderful. What did you think?
I think I like Glenn's better.
Let's talk, Benjamin, about did he like jazz at all? Because, you know, he there's almost like a jazzy element at times with him.
He liked a few. He was fond of Bill Evans, for example, but he actually had a lot more influence on the jazz community than vice versa. Mm-hmm. What Gould said was, nobody swings like Bach.
Oh, how true, how true.
He was actually quite fond of the Swingle Singers, an old a cappella group who recorded, in fact, an entire Bach album, including what Gould considered one of the great recordings of Bach of the 20th century, which is their version of the Ninth Contrapuntis from the Art of Fugue. Here's Gould playing the work, but on organ. So what you get a sense of here is that Gould conceives of Bach not as a composer of a particular instrument, the way we think of Chopin as a piano composer. Bach was a composer of musical works that could fit on organ or people's voices or saxophone quartet or string trio or what have you.
Whatever. You see, that's the great thing about him is that the universality of the master makes every instrument sound great. The Swingle Singers to a Chinese instrument. Well, I think we should go to that interview with McClure, which talks about recording, right?
Yeah, one thing we haven't mentioned much is that Gould was extremely fond of the studio, where he could edit his recordings in any way he desired.
He loved that complete control. Today they would call it a control freak.
A lot of the Bach preludes and fugues, which are rather short pieces and hence no great achievement is involved, yeah, are take ones with no splices of any kind.
Or a complete take three.
Huh? Or a complete take three, yes.
With no splicing.
Yes. On the other hand, some of the very best things we've done, and I'm thinking particularly of one fugue, the A minor from the first volume of the Volta Imperata Clavier, consisted of two extraordinary takes which were absolutely different in character and which miraculously matched each other, paced each other in tempi. And this is very unusual.
Why don't you illustrate what you're speaking of?
Right. Well, we played the A minor fugue about a year and a half ago at a session in two completely different ways, and in the first fashion, this was the way in which we phrased the subject. That became what we called take six. Then we had a take eight. Take seven was rather a letdown, as I recall. And take eight sounded something like this. And in take eight, as you can see, there was a very Teutonic emphasis. It was very pompous, it was very grand, it was a little bit turgid, mm-hmm, a little bit boring, and we felt that we couldn't go on indefinitely being that pompous about a phrase, a motivic idea that on the whole was rather lighthearted, even though its texture was quite thick. At the same time, we couldn't be quite as skittish as take six was either. Mm-hmm. So about a month later, sitting in the playback booth, we discovered that both these takes, take six and take eight, were accomplished in exactly the same amount of time. I don't remember what the minute and second hand read at the moment, but perhaps 3 minutes 20 for one, 3 minutes 22 for the other. Very close,
it's
in any event.
Incredible.
Yeah. And we then found that it was possible, in effect, to make a constant shift of gear between take six and take eight, to use take eight, to use this pompous, rather turgid, rather Teutonic version of the theme and of its mm-hmm corresponding answers for all of the basic expository passages, and for all the episodic and fragmentary ones to use take six to lighten the texture as if one were shifting to the upper register of a harpsichord or whatever. And it made one of the very best fugues that we've put out, I think.
So you built your interpretation with the razor blade and the engineer.
Indeed, and we built it after the fact. We had no idea on the day of the session that it would turn out that way. We couldn't possibly have guessed at it, and I don't think that under any pressured circumstance, under concert condition, for instance, one could ever have arrived at something quite that, if I may use the word in quite the wrong place, inspired version.
That's Glenn, and I love his voice. This is a very, very agreeable voice.
Let's hear the finished product now. This is the A minor fugue from the first book of the Well-Tempered Clavier, played by Glenn Gould.
Thank you. was Glenn Gould in the Great A Minor Fugue by Bach. Well, let's move on to the world of the Sinfonia, or the inventions. This is a very beautiful and interesting recording from his about 24th year. Talk about the pieces we'll hear.
Well, we talked about Gould, the studio man, Gould, the control freak, the editor. But of course, he only moved into that state after spending 8 or 9 years on the concert tour. His most famous concert tour was to Russia in the late 50s. He actually made the tour before Van Cliburn. In fact, he was the first North American to do so and tour the Soviet Union. What you'll hear now is a few of his three-part inventions from a live performance in Moscow of all 15 of the three-part inventions, also known as the Sinfonias.
Benjamin, isn't it the fact that he almost drove the musical and pianistic public mad? They had never heard piano playing of this kind in Romantic Russia.
Certainly in the Soviet Union, Bach was not considered fit for the concert stage. And to hear Gould go on stage and play these works so beautifully and romantically, but also with, of course, attention to voicings and the unity of the works, it really left a serious impression on many Russian musicians. And there's still Russian pianists alive to today, from Ashkenazy to Grigory Sokolov, who name Gould as one of their many influences. And it was this tour that really left an impression on Russian society, musical society.
Absolutely did. Well, here they are, the inventions, the Sinfonia from his Moscow recital. Our program has been devoted to Glenn Gould. This is the 35th anniversary of his death, and he would be 85 now. And he was, in my opinion, the great visionary and the revolutionary pianist of the century. We're going to conclude, Benjamin, with a few of your words. Mr. Lodi?
Well, I just want to say thank you again for having me on the show. And again, it's been my pleasure to, as a Gould fanboy, to be able to share some of my own interests and favorite recordings with you today.
Thank you so much. The audience is so, so appreciative. And join me next week when Benjamin Lodi, a wonderful Glenn Gould scholar and pianist, joins me in this tribute to the anniversary of Glenn Gould's death in 1982. This is David Dubal. Thank you for listening. The Piano Matters is a production of the Classical Network and is recorded at the offices and studios of the Young People's Chorus of New York City, founder and artistic director Francisco J. Nunez. The producer is Rachel Katz. For a complete playlist, go to wwfm.org and click on Playlist. The Piano Matters is made possible by the support of the listener members of the Classical Network. Become a member at wwfm.org.